Welcome to a World of Good podcast. I'm Nate Tapman.
And I'm Andrew Gale.
And we are two friends
who love Jesus,
care about the church,
and travel the world to share stories of people who do the same.
Our conversations happen in all kinds of places,
like a coffee shop in an airport terminal,
or even the back of a crowded taxi.
But no matter where we go, from Argentina to Zimbabwe,
we capture stories of the good God is doing around the world.
And we hope those stories will do you a world of good.
Welcome to a World of Good podcast. My name is Nate Tapman, and thank you so much for taking the time to listen to these conversations. We hope that you have found them helpful, enlightening, and encouraging, and it's been a lot of fun for Andrew and I as we have been able to get out and travel a little bit more and to have these conversations as we've been traveling, as opposed to doing them on Zoom. They were good conversations on Zoom, but it's much more fun to be in person when we're having these conversations. And today is the final episode of a four-part series that we are doing on the topic of immigration. And one of our goals from the series is we wanted to bring a personal component to this topic. As immigration has become so politicized in our country, all too often we get caught up in policies and laws and what this politician says or what that political party believes in. And we forget that there is a human loss, a human tragedy that in a very real way undergirds these conversations. And so we wanted to bring to you these different perspectives. And that's why we talked with Donnie, from a pastor from Honduras, and Gina, who's an author and a foster mom, Zach, a nonprofit leader. And today we have a family who originated from Iran and are currently living in Paris. And all of these stories, they cover different circumstances surrounding the topic of immigration and why people choose to immigrate, or in some cases, don't have a choice to immigrate. And so I had a long conversation with Mohammed Sahar, his wife, and Sarah, who did the translation for us. And it was a lengthy conversation, not only because of the translation, but because it took time to unpack their story. And this is a family that has gotten connected with the at-home ministry led by Samir Salibi, who many of you hopefully have heard our conversations with him in the past. And so as you hear this story and other stories of people who have immigrated, I just encourage you to ask the question, what would you do if you were in their situation? I think so often we see things on TV or we read about them on the internet, and it's easy to categorize, it's easy to generalize. But when we hear a personal story and realize that there is a lot of decision-making and prayers and sweat and tears that go into a family deciding whether they're going to stay and endure or pack up and leave everything they've known behind and go to a new country. And it's not an easy decision to make. And so here's my conversation with Mohammed Sahar and Sarah.
Let's just start from the beginning in terms of where, I mean, I know that you guys were in Iran. Maybe just describe the setting or the context 10 years ago. What was life like in Iran for your family?
گفت که ما اول یه اینترو مثل یه مقدمه برای کسایی برای شنونده ها فضای ایران یعنی نسبت به الان الانی که 10 سال پیش.
Do you mean our life or just socially or I don't know?
Yeah. Yes.
Iran situation or?
Yeah. So maybe just like given your family context, what was life like for your family?
For us specifically.
Specifically for your family.
Okay.
Work, school, family, social life, mm-hmm, your mm-hmm. family. What was life like 9 or 10 years ago?
Okay. از شرط ایران نمیگه، یعنی بیشتر زندگی خودمون، مثلا از لحاظ کارتون، مدرسه، دانشگاه یا خانواده یا اینا.
اون 10 سال پیش من خودم از لحاظ حالا شغلی
back then financially and socially everything was really good. As a wife and somebody who had a child, I was at the same time studying in college. So I had my social life, I had a good relationship with my family. But apart from the comfort that we had also had some problems.
بیشترم خب این وضعیت مشکل ساز از طرف محمد بود.
And these problems were coming from my dad, Muhammad. But personally, I had a really good relationship with my family, with my sisters, with my friends. And I had so many people around me. And compared to now, based on these things, I can say that I had a better life.
اینکه میگم همه چی داشتم، شرایط فقط اون اجتماعی بود به لحاظ مثلا کار، تحصیلات.
Again, I'm talking based on social situation of back then, because compared to then, now the fact that I don't really know the language of the country that I'm living in, it makes my options limited and I cannot really communicate with people. So back then I could say that I had everything because the job that I had was socially acceptable. I could hang out with different people. I could go out and do anything I wanted.
خیلی کارامو خودم انجام میدادم، کارهای اداری، اینکه مثلا کارهای مدرسه دخترم.
And as a woman in a country like Iran, I was actually quite independent because I could do things that I wanted to do and I wasn't dependent on anybody else. I would do them myself. I would take care of my child's needs and school and everything. And so I can say, yeah, especially this thing about independence, I really had it back then.
البته صحبت من روی این نیست که توی اون فضای ایران.
I'm not talking on behalf of every woman in Iran because as you know, women are really, really limited there. But personally, I had a really good life then and I could do everything I wanted.
ولی از فضای حالا ایران بخوام بگم، اون چیزی که حاکم بود از لحاظ سیاسی و اجتماعی ایران.
But still, even back then, politically speaking, and I mean socially, again, with the background that we have, still so many things were difficult for women to do.
خیلی آزادی ها رو زنان نداشتن.
We didn't have too much liberty, for example.
So, in regards to that, what were some of the... And again, in the Western culture, what were some of the free, compared to the Western culture, what were some of the freedoms that maybe you didn't have in Iran that a woman would have here in France?
خب یه چیزی که خیلی بوله روشن و ملموسه همین مسئله حجابه.
Obviously, some things that are pretty common in Iranian women mm-hmm. is the topic of hijab and mm-hmm. the fact that once they leave their country, they have this freedom of dress however they want to.
Mm-hmm.
But in Iran, this is very, very strict for women, especially in some, for example, how can I say, administrative places especially.
Sure.
There are several like really strict dress codes, I guess.
So walking into an administration building, you would have to make sure that you're wearing your covering and dress
exactly.
in a certain way.
Exactly.
As opposed to going shopping?
Yeah.
Or
it would be different. Very different. Yeah.
Wow. Interesting. And were you able to drive a car? Did you have a driver's license in Iran?
Yes, I could. And I actually did have, but I didn't bring it with me.
And would that have transferred here to France? You would have been able to drive here in France.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah, I really thought about this, but actually, to give you a context, since we didn't choose to come here first as mm-hmm. the first country,
mm-hmm.
we didn't think about this.
Okay.
And once we realized that she can actually change driver license,
mm-hmm.
something happened that she lost. Like,
okay.
People that had it lost it. So.
Okay.
ولی آزادی که حالا میگه
there are some things that you need freedom for them and I mean there are some liberties that are specified to a certain age and when you don't have them it's somehow like you suppress them and then you move on, you grow older and you look back, you never had them. But now when I see the things that I couldn't have, when I see that my daughter has them and she can use them, it still makes me happy even if I couldn't have them back then.
مثلا توی اجتماع ما خیلی چیزا رو حالا جوونا یا دخترا نمیتونن انجام بدن.
For example, back in my age when I was 18 or 20, I absolutely couldn't just go out with my friends to a park and have some ice cream or just like go on a date with a guy. It was completely impossible to do.
خب چون جامعه همون اینطور بود به تبع خانواده هم سختگیرتر بودن میگفتن زشت دختری نباید این حرکت ها رو انجام بدی.
Since the society was like that, our families would also try to limit us more to keep us safe. But we had this pressure on us from both sides, both the society and family. And this would make it really difficult for women.
اینا با خاطر این بود که وقتی یکی دیپلمش رو میگرفت وارد دانشگاه میخواست بشه یه گزینش ما داشتیم.
Because after graduating from high school, when you wanted to get into university, you had this sort of selection that they would judge you based on how you behave socially. For example, if you go out a lot or if you are dating somebody or how do you dress up when you're out. And after that, let's say you got into university, you would have another type of selection to get a job.
That was part of the consideration if you got into university
exactly.
or not. And was that the same for both men and women, or was that specific to women?
Specific to women.
Wow. Your test scores and your grades and all of that were part of it, but not all of it. It was your social... Your social standard and background and experience or participation.
Exactly.
Wow.
The same thing existed for guys too, but it was less strict and, well, different in some sort of way. And for example, she said exactly about the grades and everything. You could have the best grades of your whole class. But once, for example, for this selection, they would come and ask around the neighborhood, how does this girl behave? And how is her life? What does she do? And if, for example, your neighbors said something bad about you, or let's say, well, she doesn't really wear acceptable things or socially acceptable things, they would easily just not accept you.
That's a lot of pressure to try to live under and to try to live life when you are always wondering what other people are thinking about, or if other people are watching me, or how other people are thinking about. How did you make those decisions, or what did you do in terms of it, for you personally? How did this cause you to live as a teenager? What kind of a teenager were you, I guess, in regards to that?
من سعی میکردم اون چیزی که عرف جامعه است رعایت کنم هم از طرف خانوادم.
I personally tried my best to be obviously accepted by the society and my family because of the restrictions. I didn't want to do something against it. But at the same time, I used to read books a lot, novels a lot, especially foreign and Western ones, or watch movies. And I would see the freedom that they have. And I would always feel like I lack this. Why don't I have the same thing? And she didn't really talk about these specific things with me. She never really shared them. And she said her generation in Iran is called, how can I say this, burned or wasted in some sort of, like they wasted their youth generation.
They wasted their youth.
Actually, their youth was wasted.
Okay, in trying to live up to these expectations.
Exactly.
And Mohammed, what was life like 10 years ago for you as a husband, as a father?
10 سال پیش که چون همکار مامانت بودم به اصطلاح همون چیزایی که تقریبا مامانت گفت.
10 years ago it was the same situation as my wife because they were actually co-workers. They worked in the same place for a very long time. So it was the same situation.
ولی تا قبل از اون من مامانت راجع به یه مشکل صحبت کردم مشکل من
but she mentioned problem that my dad had which was before even their marriage about 25 years ago.
مشکل این بود که من از دانشگاه اخراج شدم
because I was against something.
اعتراضم نه یعنی یه حرفی رو
because one of my professors said something and I didn't really agree with it. It started creating problems for me, and so because of that, I was expelled.
10 سال قبل از اون.
And 10 years before that, I was 15, 16. Because of the situation that my mom was previously describing, and also mixed with the the religion, the restrictions that they had, the suppression that was there. This thing happened that because of that, he was being, is it called whipped? When
Yeah.
Yes, so he was whipped.
That was the consequence of exactly. being expelled from college.
No. It was 10 years before that.
10 years before
when he was 15.
Okay.
15, 16.
Okay.
Basically, what happened was that he was going back from high school. He was going home from high school. During that time, it was Ramadan. So he and his friends were really hungry. So they bought snacks. They were on their way home and they were eating those snacks. And cops saw them in the street. They arrested them because of that. And
because they weren't supposed to be eating
exactly,
during that time.
Exactly. And so they were taken to the police. They were whipped because of that. But he said him specifically more because during that time, he was also wearing a short sleeve T-shirt.
Wow. That was against the law?
Back then, yes. Now, obviously, it's less strict. But still, again, for example, in some administration-related mm-hmm. buildings or mm-hmm. they're supposed to wear a long sleeve
shirt.
For example, they cannot wear, these restrictions are, they cannot wear jeans. They should definitely wear classic pants.
Dress pants.
Exactly.
What we would call dress pants.
Yes.
Yeah. Cotton material or yeah. whatever. That event, when you were a teenager, did that kind of stay on your record at that point? Is it, and so would that have, for you to get into university, they would have seen that you had gotten in trouble by the law and had been whipped, and that would have kind of been on your record to go into university as well, which kind of goes into when you were expelled.
Yes.
Okay. So we are in Paris right now in your apartment, and a lot has happened over the last 8 years of your life. What were the circumstances that surrounded your family when you had to leave Iran?
Back then, when these things happened, it wasn't just one thing. Several things happened, and my record became quite heavier. Right now, we are in Paris, and we're far away from those things. But even now, when I think about those things, they make me uncomfortable. And I keep thinking about them, overthinking about them for a few hours, maybe. Because especially after what happened in the university, every time that something happened in the city, they would come and investigate him too. There was a sort of a list of people who had record, and they would be investigated once a while for different reasons. And he said, yes, back then we had financially, we were really good. But in terms of like mentally, we were not okay because they wouldn't let us alone. Every time he would stress about when is the next time that they would come and they will come and investigate me.
این هر ببین چیزی که من تو دانشگاه گفتم یه حرف معمولی مذهبی بود ولی از نظر
What happened in the university was slightly religion related. It wasn't even completely political or something. It was religious, but anything religious becomes political in Iran. Mm-hmm. So, and it wasn't only me. There were also other people.
With your name being on this list, how much of that had to do with your Christian faith at that point? Was your Christian faith a part of your life at that period? Or did that come later? Or where does your faith kind of intersect in all of this?
He actually didn't know anything about Christianity back then. We obviously studied about Christianity, but we knew Jesus as a prophet, not in the same way that we know him right now. But my faith in Islam was way stronger, so.
Mm. And what about your life 9-10 years ago? What was life like for you that you remember?
Well, I was a kid. I had no idea, actually, about my dad's problems. I remember the first time that I started to know about all of this, it was through a relative in Norway, in the first country that we went to. When he told me, I was really shocked. I had a mental breakdown. I started crying and I couldn't see myself, like I couldn't see my parents dealing with those things. And I thought that the only reason that we left Iran is just so we can have a better future. Life. Yeah. I'm an only child, but then I had so many friends, so many cousins, and I was always having fun, always having good grades. So yeah, it was pretty okay. Back then, it was really fine for me. My dad said it was because back then we never talked about our problems in front of you. So
Yeah, I think as most parents do. Yeah. So at that point, the Christian faith, Christian walk was not, it sounds like it wasn't part of your life, part of your belief system. At what point did that happen?
When we left Iran.
Was that the reason why you left Iran? Was your new faith? Or was it after you left Iran that you found?
After leaving Iran.
Okay. So when you decided to leave Iran and everything, you left everything behind, family and homes and friends. Was it, and Sarah, you said something that kind of made me think of this. Was it because you wanted to pursue a better life, or was it to escape or leave something in Iran or somebody in Iran?
خب بگو این سابقه من کلمه سابقه رو میتونید ترجمه کنید دیگه حالا اون گذشته من.
He was saying, since the very last day before leaving Iran, my past always followed me because of the record that he had. Every time, as he said before, they would come and investigate him for things that weren't even related to him.
چون زندگی ما هر دومون کار میکردیم، یعنی همه چیمون مستقل بود، زندگی خوبی داشتیم.
Until one time, the very last time actually that they came to, it wasn't even an investigation. It was basically, I actually do remember that because I was quite grown back then.
Old enough at that point.
Yeah, exactly. They came and I remember it was in the parking of the building. And they started taking fingerprints from my parents for absolutely no reason. And even one of the cops was, how can I say, he felt bad for what they were doing. And he suggested my dad to tell this to VOA and actually tell his story, because they have never done such thing to anybody with no explanation, no reason. And they did this in front of the whole building, like all the neighbors were there. And this was actually humiliation for them. This was the very last thing that happened.
پس ما زندگیمون خوب بود منتها.
So you see, financially we were good, but these things that kept happening somehow forced us to leave everything behind, family, friends, job, home, everything, and just leave to basically have some peace of mind.
And what was that process like to make that final decision to, I can't imagine it was just an immediate decision, but there had to be a lot of turmoil and conversations and thoughts behind it. But to finally make that decision to, okay, we're leaving. What was that experience like?
این بحث و گفتگو اون اول ازدواجمون من بارها بابات خوب میگفت.
At the beginning of our marriage, actually, Mohammed suggested several times that we leave Iran because he explained why it's difficult for him to live there. He kept saying that they would never leave me alone. But I kept saying that I cannot leave my parents and we can make it. Let's just stay here. But by the time that we wanted to actually leave Iran, meaning 9 years ago, everything became difficult, and actually I was experiencing and seeing things too, so it became out of hand.
مشکلات بابات بود ولی چیز دیگه‌ای که من.
At the same time, I didn't want you, meaning me, to experience the same things. Also, my dad's record that could follow me, because in Iran, everything becomes, it's not only one person's problem, it becomes the whole family's problem.
Family.
Exactly. Yeah. And so they didn't want me to grow up with these things. But the only problem was mostly about how we wanted to explain these things to our family and tell them that we want to leave. And the fact that we wanted to leave there for basically a better life, again, it wasn't financially, because I kept thinking about my daughter and I didn't want her to grow up with the same problems that I had, because a small example can be girls couldn't ride bicycles, for example. And I personally, I was reaching that age that my parents actually stopped me using my bike, because whenever I went out, everybody would look at me. My dad didn't want me to have problems or something. So they told me, Sarah, just stop using your bicycle. And I was actually reaching that age that I started seeing the limits that I have in the society. And they didn't want me to grow up with these things. So they basically, one of the biggest reasons that they left there was also because of me and my own future.
So when you left Iran, where did you go to next?
So the whole journey, first to Sweden, then Norway, but Norway deported us to Italy. Again, we went to Norway and then Sweden again, and then Italy again. And finally, we decided to come to France.
Okay. And for our listeners, I don't completely understand this. I'm as I hear more and more of stories like this, I begin to put pieces together. But why were you moved throughout those different countries?
ما اول رفتیم سوئد، بعد به ما پیشنهاد دادن که برید نروژ خودتون رو معرفی بکنید.
So first we went to Sweden, but we were suggested that Norway is better. So we went to Norway. But since when we wanted to leave Iran, we basically bought Italian visa, I mean, like visa from Italy. And so in Norway, when they checked our passport and type of visa, they realized that it's from Italy. So after 8 months, they sent us back to Italy.
توی ایتالیا نمیشد زندگی کرد چون سخت بود برای ما مجبور شدیم.
In Italy, life was really difficult, especially for foreigners. So we couldn't continue living there. We went back to Norway, but Norway's police is really, really strict. So we went to Sweden.
توی سوئد هم خب متوجه شدن ما سیاه زندگی میکنیم دیپورتمون کردن ایتالیا.
And in Sweden, they found out that we're living there illegally. So again, they sent us back to Italy.
توی ایتالیا هم باز دیدیم سخته اومدیم فرانسه.
Again in Italy, it was difficult, so we came to France.
And how long have you now been in France?
Almost 5 years.
Okay. So all of that took place in about 3 or 4 years?
Yes.
A period of time. At what point along this journey did Christ become more than just a prophet in your life?
توی فرانسه توی یه کلیسا نشسته بود. البته من
Everything started in France. But the very first time that I went to a church, I directly told them that I'm here only for the papers and nothing else. But back then, I had no faith in anything, not even Islam. I was completely atheist.
ولی زمان که یه روزی حرف راجع به روح القدس بود.
But one day they were talking about the Holy Spirit, and it really, really touched my heart.
از اون روز بود که دیگه با مامانت شروع کردیم مرتب کتاب میخوندیم و
And it was from that day that we became more interested. We started reading the Bible and we started having so many questions. We wanted to know who Jesus is, what he's doing, what he can do for us.
ولی همچنان باز شک داشتیم.
But still I was really doubtful. For example, my prayers were not in the name of Jesus.
اولین اعترافم و سال 2018
My first confession was in 2018 in the house of another Christian woman. Her name is Verona and Samir was there too.
اونجا من اعتراف کردم که عیسی خداست. یعنی عیسی بالاتر از اون چیزیه که من فکر میکردم.
And it was the first time that I confessed that Jesus is God and I was having faith in Jesus.
And was this a family experience? Was this something as a family that you all have moved forward in this faith, or was it more individually, or how did that happen, or how has that happened and progressed and grown?
It was quite individual, mostly two parts, I guess, my parents and me. But the day that he had this confession, it was with my mother, and they both actually confessed.
How long ago was that? You said 2018.
Yeah.
One of the questions that I have is, you recently just reunited with some family members in another country. You're able to travel and meet them. Do they know that, do your family members know that you're followers of Christ? And if so, what are those family get-togethers like for you?
همه خانواده من میدونن، هیچ کدومشون هم هیچ اعتراضی نکردن.
He talked about his own family members first, that quite all of them know. It was only one of his cousins that found out and stopped talking with him. But recently, we met mostly my mother's family.
Okay.
And well, there were a few of them that started mocking us, and there was tension. Just two of them. The rest were either neutral or quite okay. Yeah.
And are the rest of your family members, they follow Islam?
The ones that are still in Iran, they were born Muslim. They are not necessarily faithful. And the rest that are not in Iran, one of them is also Christian. The other is atheist. The other is communist.
What is, and maybe this is probably a question for you mainly, what's your life like here in Paris? You are 22, correct? You told me earlier, 22 years old. So you've been in Paris now since you were 17, approximately.
Yes, exactly.
around that. And so you finished the last 2 years of high school. Is that correct?
I had to redo high school. Yeah.
And you are also currently in university.
Exactly.
Correct? You haven't graduated from university.
No, it's my second year now.
Okay. What is life like for you in terms of living in Paris and being here?
Actually, lately it's changed a lot. At the beginning when I came here, as I said before, it was like an individual experience for my parents and then for me. When I came here, I was really confused, actually. I didn't even know if God truly exists. I was being, how can I say, I didn't know who to hang out with. I didn't know people that I'm hanging out with are the right ones. What do they follow? What do they believe in? And thank God that God protected me, to be honest, because I was really starting to follow some people that, now that I think about them, I realize that they were absolutely not the type of people that I had to be friends with. Well, high school was quite difficult because it was the third country that I was going to school in. And the experience of high school for many people is really nice. For me, it was, honestly, every day I thank God that high school finished. Mostly because people maybe didn't accept me, maybe socially. I don't know based on what, but I was not really accepted. Also, I was having a difficult time learning French because it was, I guess, the fourth language that I was learning. And I was just mentally tired. I could not try harder because when we were in Italy, I tried my best to just be part of their society, be Italian. And I was really happy that I was not recognizable as a foreign student. Like, my accent was perfect. My looks were exactly Italian. My name was Italian, but as soon as they found out that I'm not Italian, they would immediately stop hanging out with me. So when I came here, I just gave up. I didn't care who I was hanging out with. I didn't care who wants to be friends with me or not. Until I finished high school and I started university, I started having a really glow up in my life. And I feel like God did that for me because all of a sudden, all of my friends stopped somehow hanging out with me, and I lost all of my friends that I had here from high school or from like different places. And I started having a whole new group of friends that are actually really good for my mental health, for what I believe in. They do not mock me. They do not limit me in my faith, in what I believe. They don't judge me. And so at the beginning, it was really difficult again after high school, especially it was quarantine. Yeah, I was all alone. My friends left me. Everything was happening at the same time. But after a while, I realized that, no, actually, this is for my own good. This is for my benefit. And God is actually doing all of these things. So I just trusted him. And I started having, like, I feel like in that period, especially in quarantine, the first one, my faith became much stronger in God.
Mm.
I started to trust him even more than before. And also, I had this small period that I could experience living in central Paris, and it changed my whole opinion about Paris. Like before, I used to say that I don't know if I really like France, I don't know if I want to stay in Paris, but now I told my parents that I don't even want to go to exchange anymore. I just want to stay here, I want to live here, mm-hmm. I want to get an apartment, I want to continue my life in Paris. So currently, I cannot say that like everything's perfect,
mm-hmm.
everything's as I want, because I have other projects and I'm working on them, but it's much better and I'm truly much happier.
Mm-hmm. Mm. As I'm listening to your story as a family, are there any regrets to any decisions that you've made along the way?
No.
Seeing Sarah here today, you have to be proud of who she is and what she's becoming and the dreams that she has. And I can imagine that's part of why you don't have any regrets is, I mean, it sounds like one of the main decisions was you didn't want Sarah to grow up in Iran, but to have the life that she's able to live now, especially going to university.
آره برات هم برای تو خوشحالیم همین که برای خودمون خوشحالیم.
We obviously are happy for her, but we're also happy for ourselves because we might have had everything in Iran, but we didn't have peace. But right now, we might not have so many things, but we do have peace, and that's more important.
همینطور که بابات گفت، اونجا آرامش رو نداشتیم و اینکه خدا رو درست نشناخته بودیم و بهمون.
As my husband said before, yes, we are happy, but the previous question that you asked, if we regret something, I remember the last time, the very last time that I saw my mother, I was thinking, when can I see her again? And during the whole time that I didn't know God, I still had that feeling in my heart. But since I started knowing Jesus, I realized that maybe my own father couldn't do many things, couldn't do special things for me. But I know that my heavenly father can do anything for me. It's just enough for me to trust him and ask him. This really warms my heart and is somehow like the biggest hope that I have. And I'm sure that like one day I can see her again. When this time I went back to see my father and other relatives, I was extremely happy to see them, but I realized that I have something that they don't have, and I wanted to share this with them so bad. I don't know when they can accept this, but mm-hmm. this is my biggest wish for them to have this too.
Mm. You guys are connected with the at-home community. And what does at-home mean for you and your family?
خود at-home که حالا یه اسمه منتها.
The very first person that I met was Samir. It was not necessarily the church at home that I got to know. It was firstly Samir. But at home in general, it felt like it was like a ladder for me to get closer to Jesus.
Hmm. What is, can you explain that a little bit more?
اول که من یه کلیسای دیگه میرفتم قبل از اینکه بیام توی at home.
Before that, I used to go to another church. And even if I wasn't tired, I would get tired there when I went there. Because I realized once we started going to at home, I realized that before that, I didn't really understand who God is. But in at home, we started learning that. We started to know more. And 2 weeks after going to after two Sundays, Samir and Verona suggested parents to have Bible study. They started with John. That started to teach them a lot. And it was from then that I started getting to know God exactly and truly. So at home is really important to me.
Mm. Mm.
یه آلارم بود که نخوابه دیگه. حتما براش آلارم بود که نخوابه.
My mom says at home was like an alarm for him to not sleep anymore.
خب من همین تجربه ها رو با محمد داشتم توی کلیسای ات هوم.
Again, in the beginning, in the previous church that we used to go, we would hear testimonies or confessions or the word that the pastor would preach to us. But it started creating so much confusion for me. It felt like I'm collecting information from different sources and they didn't really match. But again, when they started going to At Home, and after those 2 weeks, they suggested Bible study. And so I remember that I was really happy, but at the same time, I was asking how we're going to do it because I don't know French. We don't know French. Mm-hmm. And they said, no, we're going to do it in Arabic. And it was then they started just the two of them and with Samir and Verona. And then they told to their friends. They started becoming more and more and more, and then it was my dad who started the translation and everything. She says that those lessons with Samir and Verona, they really helped us to get to know God and Jesus and Christianity and start to understand it deeply, actually following a path to understand this and progressing. She said it felt like at the beginning, it felt like we're going to a university, but there was no professor to teach us anything. But when we got to know Samir, it was like that professor who wanted to teach us different things.
خدا برکت بده به خدمت سمیر و تمام کسایی که توی اتم هستن.
God bless Samir for whatever he has done for us so far. And I know that this was God's guidance to bring us here and get to know Samir and starting getting those lessons. Because I remember before that, the very, very first church that we used to go, every time that the pastor wanted to preach, he would start it with a question. Every time that I answered, my answer was so irrelevant. And every time I felt so out of place and telling myself that I have to read the Bible, my answer has nothing to do with the question. And after that, when we got to know Samir, we started learning things that we could use them for real and we could understand more Christianity and God. And so exactly as my husband said, it was like a ladder for us to grow in this.
I understand that you have a story of something that God did in your life. Do you want to just share with the listeners
what that
is?
Well, after, as my father said, life was difficult in Italy. So, and we were under a lot of pressure and stress. And I started having this disease that we found it out quite late. We found it out after 2 years. Long story short, it was basically a tumor in my brain. That it wouldn't kill me, but still it was a disease and it would limit me in my life. Well, when we came here, I was really hopeless. I didn't want to do anything. I didn't want to go to any doctor, any hospital. And at the beginning, my parents forced me to go and do all those tests and everything. But it was really painful every time that I went to hospital. So at some point, I completely gave up. We had a fight. I told them I don't want to go to the doctor anymore, especially because the doctor that I went to, she was really, really mean with me because I didn't know French, and she insisted that I had to talk French, but I couldn't understand anything. I couldn't tell her anything. I remember I told her that you're here to deal with my disease, not with the fact that you're not my French teacher.
You told her this?
And
or you wanted to tell her
I
this?
I wanted to tell her, but I couldn't because I didn't
couldn't
know French. And she,
that.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
I remember that day vividly because I started having a mental breakdown there. I was crying. I couldn't talk. My dad was mad and we left the hospital so dramatically. But after that, I decided that I don't want to do anything for my disease anymore. That was in the very beginning of my faith and I was still really weak. I still didn't know if God exists. And sometimes I prayed, sometimes I didn't. Sometimes I was like, if this happened to me, there's no God. Why should this happen to me? And then I didn't go to hospital for several months, I don't know, 6 or 8 months. The next time that we went there, we were with Samir and Verona. I had a little bit of growth then. And We prayed and I was sure that I mentally prepared myself that, okay, the doctor is going to be mean, but my French progress now. And she would definitely tell me that my situation is much worse than before. Also, I stopped taking medicine too. When I went there, the doctor was really, really nice to me.
Same doctor.
Yeah, the same doctor.
Same doctor.
And she was like, wow, now you talk French. And I was like, yeah. And then she checked my results and she was like, wow, you're much better. Like, did you take your medicine? I was like, what? And she was like, everything's fine now. You can actually just continue taking this medicine for the next year and you can come next year. You don't even need to come like every month or even 3 months. Or
wow.
I was so shocked. And I just left her room so shocked. I was like, there's nothing. Like, how is that possible? And
wow.
I knew with my whole heart that this was God, because I didn't take medicine. I stopped doing any type of result, any type of test, like even blood test. I wouldn't do it. I refused. And I was under a lot of pressure and stress. Again, it was like the situation didn't change at all.
Mm-hmm.
But all of a sudden, everything was fine. Oh, that was my experience.
Great. Thank you for sharing that. The name of the podcast that we have is called A World of Good.
Mm-hmm.
And so one of the questions we like to ask kind of at the end is just, what good is God doing in your world today, in your life and family? What is something that is good?
God is basically guiding our life. He's moving our life forward, and that's full of goodness.
من اگه بخوام اینو جواب بدم یه ذره طولانیه چون اصلا خواستم چیز زندگیتم بگم.
She said previously when I was talking, she wanted to add a few things that is also related to the question that you asked. When we were in Italy, part of the when we said that life was difficult, part of it was all exactly this disease that my daughter had, because in Italy, the doctors and the system, they didn't cooperate with us because, well, we were foreigners and they didn't really care about foreigners. And they told us whether she does the surgery or she doesn't, because the type of surgery was actually really delicate one, the one that they didn't actually want to do it because it was difficult. And so in any case, her situation was still dangerous. And this really stressed us. This really made us question if we have to stay there or not. And when we were there, I used to pray for my daughter, but all my prayers were doubtful and full of stress. I didn't know if this God that I'm praying to is actually capable of saving my daughter, taking care of her, because I saw her in that situation, and every time that she went out, I was afraid that, because part of my condition was that I would get panic attacks and I would faint. And if for example, I was alone, it could become really dangerous. And so every time that my daughter went out alone, I was always worried that, is she okay? Or I would pray, but my prayers were not really, they were full of stress. And so the second time that we decided to leave Italy, it was mostly because of my daughter's condition. And once we arrived here, we actually didn't have a really good relationship back then, especially after Italy, because each one of us, we were in a different level of depression, and we didn't communicate. We never talked when we were at home. It was total silence. And so when I came here, I told myself that I'm going to church. I'm going to find some people who talk Persian, are Iranians, and I'm going to find new friends, and I can hopefully socialize.
و وقتی اومدیم فرانسه ما خیلی سالا از دست داده بودیم. خیلی چیزا عقب بود توی زندگی ما.
And once I got to know these people, since our life was really behind in any term possible compared to other people, I wanted to accelerate this. So when I saw these people, I didn't even know them, and I didn't even believe in Christianity, but they told me to, if I want to get baptized, and they baptized me, but I didn't believe in anything. I just followed them. I thought that this is going to help me to take my life a few steps forward. And when we came here, as I said, I wanted to somehow accelerate my life. So we started going to this church, and I thought that if, for example, they they pray for us, things would get better. And keep in mind that we lost our contact with our family back in Iran because we kept changing countries. And, well, they were judging us. They were talking behind our back. So once we arrived to France, we stayed here. We were here for 11 months and they didn't even know. And so we basically had no one. And mentally, we were in a really, really dark place, really awful place, each one of us. In the first church that we went, I thought that if I asked them to pray, it would help things. And back then, my daughter was, her mental state was way worse than us. And I was physically smaller than now. And I had super short hair. I shaved my hair completely. And I used to wear dark clothes. Two times it happened to me that I got panic attacks there. And so once my mom told them to pray for me, they prayed. But after that, we heard rumors that they thought that I'm Satanist. Yeah.
بعد از اون اومدیم من دیگه اون کلیسا رو نرفتم ماها میرفتیم
خدای منو با دخترم امتحان نکن یه شب خواب دیدم So after that happening I started questioning everything that why this happened to my daughter and I started asking God that we wanted to when we left our country we were looking for a better life, better situation for my daughter. But now, not only we don't have anything that we had before, my daughter also has this disease. And the whole situation was really catastrophic. And I remember one time I had this dream that God showed me. I didn't know back then, but now I understand that it was God talking with me back then. He was telling me, look at Moses, look at Abraham, and look at David. They all lived a difficult life, but I blessed them. It was after that that I actually didn't really talk about the dream with anyone, and I just talked about it with Samir. I knew after that that, and in that dream, God basically told her that it's me, that this is God, and Jesus is God. I'm Jesus. And so it was exactly from then that her life started changing and she started seeing the blessings of God and she started seeing that she prayed for me and after that it was us when we went to the hospital and we heard wow. that my disease actually is way better. She says that I keep asking God, why didn't you come to me before, way before this? And why specifically in that period?
واقعا هی کلام خدا برام تداعی میشد. ناراحت میشدم از بعضی کاراشون. مثلا مسخره میکردم وقتی دعا میکردم.
And I thank God for the fact that he actually encountered me. And when I was in Turkey visiting my family, I was being mocked. And the whole situation with them, there was a lot of tension. It wasn't really... some of them were not really welcomed about this. But thank God that we had this specific day that I had the chance to pray in front of all of them in the name of Jesus because I kept asking God that I don't want to be in a situation that I end up denying you or I end up hiding you even. I actually had this opportunity to be praying in front of all of them, even if they were mocking me at the very same moment, but I still did that. And I wish them from the bottom of my heart that they also find the same thing. And I kept remembering this part in the Bible that Jesus said that my family are not my sisters and brothers, are people who have faith in me. I don't recite the exact thing, same thing, but she said, I kept remembering this and this gave me hope to continue praying for them and wishing them to have the same thing. And I pray for them, for their hearts to be touched and be encountered by God. And now I understand that this is God's decision, that he wanted to see me exactly in this period of my life when I was at the darkest moments and period of my life that he decided to come to me and encounter me and this is the very last thing I say is that it was really interesting that in Turkey even if they were mocking us they admitted that the room that they were staying in, my parents and I, they always said that your room has such nice vibes. It's really peaceful in here. And every time that I prayed, they were like, can you pray for us too? Yeah.
Sarah, I'll ask you as well, what good is God doing in your world today?
Honestly, every single thing in my life, I can say from the moment that I wake up every day, the most simple tasks that I do, everything, I can say that this is God giving me the blessing and the opportunity to be living this. Honestly, everything that is in my life, every person that, I cannot say every person because sometimes some things are not from God. But at the same time, I know that even people who are in my life that might potentially hurt me, God is going to save me from them and protecting from them. I had a really hard time trusting God, honestly trusting anybody because many things happened that gave me severe trust issues. And so I was having this problem in my faith. I couldn't trust God. But in another period, I had healing, but mostly mentally and spiritually. I had the opportunity to be able to really, truly trust God. And it was the best thing that happened to me because no matter what happens now, I can just stay calm. I can say, I'm just going to trust God. I'm just going to let it in his hands. He has the best ideas. He's going to do it. And I'm not going to worry about it anymore. And magically, it's perfect. So
there's a peace there that you didn't have before.
Exactly.
In certain situations, circumstances, things like that.
Exactly. And even I keep telling my parents that there's some situations that, let's say, for example, financially, something happens that we suddenly lose a bit of money or something. I keep telling them, be sure if this happened, maybe somebody else needed it. Maybe God is taking it from us to give it to somebody else. This is going to come back even more. Like, I trust God. And so this is the person that I am today. I know that God changed me and God made me who I am today. So every single thing in my life is God's work. And
Well, Mohammed, Sahar, Sarah, thank you so much for sharing your story and your journey, and blessings to your family as you guys continue on your journey. And we'll continue to pray for you. And I know your family as well back in Iran. And we'll pray that God touches them in a very special way, that they'll recognize that it's Him working in their life.
Thanks for listening to A World of Good. A World of Good is a podcast production of Global Strategy and Church of God Ministries. Our theme song is Colorado by Leo Flores. If you want to join the conversation, visit us at Twitter at A World of Good Pod, on Instagram, A World of Good Podcast, or visit our website, chogglobal.org/A World of Good. And join us next time as we share more stories of good from around the world.